Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Beyond the Dark tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking to a very interesting man, Philip Carr Gomme, who is the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids. Philip, I am in your hands. First of all, good evening and welcome to the programme.
Thank you. Hello.
What is the Order about?
Oh, well, when I was young, living in London, my dad worked for a college, and the chap who ran the college was the old chief druid in London, and this was in the 1960s, and I became fascinated by what he was teaching, and he ran the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids, and I trained in the order. I became interested in this whole idea of our land being a magical land, and the spiritual tradition of Druidry being a sort of indigenous tradition of these islands and so on. So I started to study with him and train with him.
Right. All I knew about Druids was King Arthur. That straight away I think of Merlin and I think of the magical days. What actually is a Druid?
Well, a Druid is a person who is inspired by the ancient Druid. The Druid today is inspired by the stories and tales of the ancient Druid, and who also has learned some of the magical lore that has come down to us, animal lore, plant lore, star lore, the old myths and stories, who believes that there's something more to life than just the everyday humdrum world that most of us are familiar with.
Now, we hear about these oracles, these magic books with potions. Is there such a book?
Well, oracles, you say. There are oracles, modern day ones. My wife and I, Stephanie, we've helped to create the Druid Animal Oracle and the Druid Plant Oracle and the Druid Craft Tarot, which act like oracles. But the idea behind an oracle really is that there's a way in which the world can give us signs and little indications and clues as to what might be lying under the surface in our lives, the sort of hidden dynamics behind events and so on, and that if we just settle down and are calm and are attentive, perhaps they can speak to us and give us some sort of insights into how we should conduct our lives.
How is your life and your wife's life different to mine?
Well, I don't know anything about your life.
Tell me about your life.
Okay. Well, it would be very hard for me to make a comparison. But I suppose the difference for me came, you know, when I was young, I took a university degree, and I worked in a travel company in London and so on, and raised a family. And so I was very familiar with a sort of normal everyday life, as you'd put it. But because I was lucky enough to have met the old chief druid, who showed me really that all those wonderful things that we read about, Merlin and King Arthur and all these things, that they're not just stories for children, as it were, but they suggest that life is really magical. And the interesting thing is, if you approach the world and your life in that way, you do actually have magical things happening to you. So I've been terribly lucky, and both of us have been very lucky in meeting wonderful people, having all sorts of exciting adventures, and really coming to understand life in a way that sees everything as full of potential and possibility.
So, does magic exist in this world?
Oh, yes. I mean, we all know when we go and see a wonderful bit of theatre or a musical, or we, you know, wake up in the morning, you know, last week with all the wonderful snow around, you open your curtains, and you're suddenly you might find yourself saying, gosh, that's magic. Or you walk out of it, you're sort of transported in some way. You feel, you know, life is worthwhile and so on. And most people think that we're just at the mercy of circumstances. You just have to wait till you see, you know, a magical event such as a sunrise or a wonderful theatrical production or so on. But what traditions like Druidry do is they say, well, no, actually you can work at making your life magical. And so there are all sorts of techniques and ideas and ceremonies and rituals and devices like the oracles and so on, which are designed to help you take a sort of active part in creating the magic in your life rather than being passive.
What is the advantage of being a member of this order? What do you get from it?
What do you get from it? Well, when I was young, I had to go and visit the old Chief Druids. So I used to go round after school from the sort of ages of 16 onwards and have a cup of tea with him, and he would teach me about it. And then my life changed totally when I was in my mid-30s, and he had died 9 years previously. And he suddenly appeared to me one day and said, look, all this stuff can be very helpful for anybody, and you should put all this material into the form of a distance learning program so that people can learn about it in their homes, so they don't have to go anywhere to learn it. And so that's what we've been doing over the last sort of 30 years. And so people, when they join, you know, we've got a big website with a big discussion board and so on. And then when people join, we send them lessons in Druidry in the mail. And it comes with CDs with stories and music and meditations. And it's a sort of graduated training program that goes through three levels, the Bard, the Ovate, and the Druid. Teaching you about the mysteries of Druidry, but you do it at your own pace in your own home. And it's now published in English, French, German, Dutch, Czech, Italian, and Portuguese. And we have a team of tutors all over the world who tutor on email mainly. And then we have various events. We have four camps a year in the UK. We have a camp in America, a camp in New Zealand, you know, all sorts of activities. We have big parties at Glastonbury twice a year. So we have a whole bunch of activities. And then there are groups. There are about 90 groups around the world, people who meet together in person if they happen to be in the right area, as it were. So there's a whole load of things that we do, but the main thing is we have about 12,000 members, and the main thing we do is we send out this training program so that wherever you are, in however sort of remote a location you might be around the world, you can actually receive this material and learn from it.
Philip, what would I get from being a druid? If I became a druid and went through these stages,
yeah.
At the end of it, what would I? Why would I be different?
I think you'd be happier. I mean, and I'm saying this not just, you know, obviously because I believe in it, but because over the last 30 years, we've just had so many thousands of letters and reports from people saying how it's changed their lives. And I think you'd be happier. It's a sort of voyage of self-exploration as well. I mean, I've also trained in psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, and so you know, there's a way in which modern sort of psychological understanding is woven into this, because nothing stays the same. We're not trying to do what people did thousands of years ago. That would be silly, because everything moves forward. So we're trying to integrate sort of modern psychological understanding with the ancient ways. So I think you'd be happier. I think you'd be in touch with a great bunch of people. And you would find one of the big things about Druid is to open to your creativity. So we've got lots of musicians and poets and artists and things like that. Because, you know, the old corny sort of cartoon of Asterix with his cauldron and the Druid potion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a sort of touch of truth in that, in as much as we work with a concept called Arwen. We believe that creative energy is an actual sort of force that flows through you. And anybody who's played music or written or done anything creative will know that sometimes it seems to flow through you like a sort of energy. And that's a sort of a way we actually work with that flow to sort of stimulate it in our beings. And so I suspect you'd find that you'd be more creative too.
Is there religion in your life, or is being a druid the religion?
Well, for some people, religion is a very loaded word, and some people like the word, and it connects them with ideas of reverence and faith and so on. And for them, Druidry is a religion. Other people, the word doesn't work for them, and they sort of associate it with the you know, perhaps negative experiences they've had with, you know, establishment religions and so on. So they prefer to use a term like a spiritual way or a spiritual path. So I think the thing is not to get bogged down in the terminology. It just depends. It can be a religion to you, or it can be a spiritual path to you.
Are you friends with the animals and the earth? Is that part of who you are?
It's a big part of it. It's you know, when we look at what's happened to the planet and these sort of awful situation we've got ourselves into, we can see that our disconnection from nature, that kind of pride that we have that science and sort of human will could control our lives, it was misguided, and we had to get back in touch with nature again and learn from it and to be friends with it, you know. And with all the sort of masses of species extinction that's going on at the moment, that's more and more vital. So it's a sort of ecological philosophy and way of life as well.
What do other religions feel about druids? Do they are they against you? Are they you? Or they find you amusing?
We've got very good relations. About a month ago, I spent a weekend up in Birmingham with connecting with Hindus, and we had a wonderful meeting between Druids and Hindus in the Balaji Temple there. There are lots of sort of common connections between Hinduism and Druidry, which may have a historical origin in the sort of Indo-European roots of both cultures. And so we had a wonderful time together. We've had multi-faith, interfaith conferences with Christians and Druids. Quite a few Christians are Druids. There are people who call themselves pagans and Wiccans who are Druids, but there are also Christians who are Druids as well.
What about witches?
Yeah, there are witches who are Druids too. It's a very sort of inclusive and generous kind of approach to life.
Now, I've got to ask, as the leader of the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids, do you wear a wonderful robe?
I do sometimes. I think the important thing is to do things that help you connect. When you do a ceremony at Stonehenge or, you know, on top of Glastonbury Tor, it looks better and it sort of feels better to all be wearing some sort of, you know, wonderful robes and all the rest of it. But, you know, if I'm in my garden at home or a group of friends, we go up onto one of the hills to celebrate a solstice or something like that, then no, we don't bother.
Tell me what the love and passion is for Stonehenge.
Well, the love for Stonehenge is, I think, it's important to say, by the way, that there are all sorts of different druids all over the country and in different groupings and all the rest of it. And I think, you know, for us, we see Stonehenge as one of many sacred sites. There are lots of sacred sites. It's not that we're obsessed with just one place like Stonehenge. But of course, Stonehenge is this wonderful link with the past, with the ancestors, with the pre-Druidic ancestors who built it, who left this legacy for us. And although it's, you know, unfortunate because it's surrounded, you know, there are roads on two sides, as it were, and it can be quite noisy from the traffic, when you actually go in there and you stand amongst these great stones, there's a beautiful sort of sense of welcoming and warmth and peace in this place. And you do feel very much in touch with the ancestors, but also with the future generations.
Do you have a god? Do you worship somebody?
Some druids do. There are monotheistic druids, there are Christian druids who worship a god. There are pagan druids who would see God as a goddess, or would see spirit as a goddess, or great spirit. There are pantheists who think that deity is sort of in everything and is nature. There are polytheists who see lots of gods. And then there are atheists, people who don't think we need a concept of God because our minds can't possibly understand it anyway, and it sort of gets in the way. My favorite definition at the moment is I think I'm a trans-igtheist. And an igtheist is somebody who says essentially, well, I don't know. I'm ignorant, as it were, because I'm just a poor mortal. You know, I don't really know. And I'm a trans-igtheist because I think there's something, you know, transcendent that does exist in the world, you know, something like that.
As a druid, do you have your own marriage ceremony, or are you not married in the eyes of the law?
Yes, we do. We have our own rites of passage, marriage ceremonies and funerals and baby namings and so on. And that's one of the things that increasingly druids are asked to do, because often we will try to do these outside in the natural world in a beautiful setting. And some are registered celebrants and are able to, you know, the law is different. In Scotland, for instance, there are registered celebrants. In the UK, it's harder. So usually for a wedding, you have to have a civil wedding ceremony for the legal side of things, and then a druid wedding for the more sort of celebratory side.
Which is what, briefly?
For example, if you were going to have a druid wedding, you would choose some lovely spot in the woods or on a hillside or somewhere lovely. You would set up a circle. You'd have everybody standing around in a circle, friends and relatives and so on. And then the bride and groom would be led in and blessed in all four directions, north, south, east and west, which have different associations to different ideas and so on, and elements. So be blessed by earth, air, fire, and water. And then, you know, would do the usual things, you know, kissing and rings and all the rest of it. But it would be couched in a particular language associated with the natural world and with the powers of nature.
So do you have your own language?
Well, there is the tree language of the Druids, which is called Ogham, which is a script, an ancient Irish script, that over time has become associated with the Druids. Robert Graves, the poet, was very keen on it. And they're like little symbols or signs reminiscent of runes. And we use those, so we can send coded messages to each other that only Druids or people familiar with Ogham would be able to understand.
I've got to ask you to send a coded message via the airways, please.
Well, if you want, I've done a book with a friend, Richard Haygate, called The Book of English Magic, and in that there's a section on Druids, and we've got actually instructions for sending coded messages on that.
Well, can we have a coded message? Just send a quick coded message.
But we're on radio, aren't we?
Yeah, you can send one. Nobody will know what it is.
Oh, I see. Yes, okay. I'll email you a coded message.
So you can't. So it's got to be written down. You can't actually speak the coded message.
It would be inappropriate for me to speak it over the airwaves, I feel.
Ah, right. And this is the tree language.
Yes.
It's getting more and more fascinating, this. I've got to ask. I'm sorry to bring it down to this level.
That's all right.
Do you run naked through the woods?
Well, if somebody likes to run naked, then of course, why not? You know, it's only our sort of prudish sort of upbringing that might make us inhibited about that. But you know, there's nothing, as I'm sure you know yourself, there's nothing nicer on a summer's morning to come out of the house and roll in the dew.
You've got me stumped for the words for the first time in my life, Philip. Philip, on a serious note, your children that brought up, if they leave your way of life, do you turn against them over that?
Oh, good heavens, no. I mean, no. And we would never, I mean, you know, I've got four children and never, you know, would never, you know, they don't consider themselves Druids. You know what kids are like. You know, they always want to do the opposite of what their parents are doing. But they all respect Druidry very much. Three of them, my oldest son is too old for that, but three other ones have been to lots of the Druid camps that we hold. We always have, you know, we have about 100 people and about 40 kids, 30, 40 kids, about 60 adults. And we put on plays and play music and sit around bonfires and things. And so, and they love that, and they've always gone to the Druid camps. But there's no children. You know, I think children should be left free range. Really,
if somebody out there wants, I mean, first of all, you must tell us about your website. Tell us first about the website.
Okay, the website is www.druidry.org. So that's D-R-U-I-D-R-Y. .org, druidry.org, and there's lots in there and information about our training program and all the material that we send. You know, if you don't like it, you just send it back and we send you the money back. So that's, you know, that's how it works. And you'll see there's some video clips and there's some clips on YouTube and so on.
What, for somebody out there,
yeah,
what would, when they became a druid, how would their life change? In a few sentences.
In a few sentences. I think what would happen is it would be a bit like opening the curtains last week when there was all that snow. You know, I don't know what it was like where you are, but where we were, I think it was Wednesday or something, we opened the curtains and there was just this magical land in front of us. And I think that's the kind of experience people have. It's like, you know, we send this stuff and it's really nicely produced. Over the years, we've managed to get, you know, get it looking really lovely and so on. And you open it and it's inspiring. And hopefully it engenders that feeling of, oh, gosh, there's more to life than I even dared to imagine, with a strange sense of familiarity. And that's the funny thing, is it's not like it's completely new and unexpected. It's like, I always knew it was like that, really. I always knew life could be magical like this, really.
Is there a downside, Philip, to being a druid? Are you ridiculed?
No, do you know, one of the things that doesn't happen in this country, it may be harder for people in other countries, possibly in the United States, where there tends to be more fundamentalist Christianity and so on. But my experience I've been doing this for 40 years now, 42 years, and I've received very little negativity from people. Most people, when they hear about it, they're intrigued. They're sort of they're either completely puzzled and fascinated, and they'll say things like, oh, I didn't know people did that, you know, and tell me more. Or they already know a little bit and they want to know more. But they're respectful. And in 42 years, I've only come across only one incident that I can actually think of actual prejudice.
How many druids do you reckon there are around the world?
I think probably, I don't know, it's hard to tell, but probably sort of 50,000, something like that.
Philip, what's the website again?
It's druidry.org, D-R-U-I-D-R-Y, druidry.org.
Philip Cardom, you're a very interesting man.
Thank you so much.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.